Hey, is that the new iPhone 15 Pro?
Yeah, it's made with titanium and the Pro camera is epic. Just got it at T-Mobile.
Nice.
Yep, and I got their Go 5G Next plan, so now I have the freedom to upgrade my phone every year.
Whoa, I gotta get to T-Mobile.
Get our best deals on iPhone 15 Pro at T-Mobile.com. One-year upgrade requires Go 5G Next plan, financing new qualifying device, and upgrading in good condition after 6 months with half paid off.
Facts are facts, like how contributing to employees' financial security makes them want to work harder for their company. In fact, according to a 2023 study by Principal, 87% of employers say that better employee financial security means employees are more engaged and productive at work. The fact of the matter is that employees want to feel financially secure in their future. So consider this. Principal helps you invest in your employees by providing customized benefits and retirement plans to help keep your employees more engaged and productive. When you take care of your team, they take care of business. That's a fact. Learn how Principal can help you find the right benefits and retirement plan for your team at principal.com/benefits. Products and services offered by member companies of the Principal Financial Group, Des Moines, Iowa. For important information, visit principal.com/disclosures.
For those of you who are avid watchers of Major League Baseball, or maybe just postseason baseball, you didn't honestly think that the Astros would bow out without a fight, did you?
The 1-2. Ground ball softly hit right at Pena. Shortstop has it. Shovels the second for one. Altuve to first. That's two. And that is the ball game. The Houston Astros take game three from the Texas Rangers, winning tonight by the final of 8-5. Rangers lead the series 2-1.
Robert Ford and Steve Sparks, the play-by-play and color team on Astros Radio, been together a long time. We're always pleased when we can snag a couple minutes with one or the other. And tonight it's former big league pitcher Steve Sparks who joins us from the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Arlington is where the ballpark is located as the Astros grab this third game and never did have a lead in the first two games in their own park, Steve. But here they are. They're able to cut into that Rangers lead. So what was the biggest difference in the Astros winning game three?
You know what, Amy? I think it's just the reliance on the home run, I think, is hurt Astros at the beginning of the postseason. Same thing against the Twins. And coming into tonight's game, I think 80% of their runs had scored via the home run. So to be able to get some hits with runners in scoring position, I think they had five of them tonight. With their ninth-place hitter, Martin Maldonado, who in the second inning with two outs got that big two-run single. And I think that got everybody, you know, off their seats in the dugout and kind of fired up and, and kind of going, I thought.
You were a pitcher in the big leagues that Max Scherzer gets the start in game number three, hadn't pitched in quite a while. How long does it take for a pitcher to settle back in where he can feel comfortable?
You know what? Sometimes it doesn't take long at all when you look at his stuff. And we saw it right away in the first inning. We saw the lively hop on his fastball, the sharp break on everything else. And it's kind of weird because when he came back out for the second inning, which is kind of typical of somebody who hasn't pitched in 36 days, is on an 0-2 pitch, he hit Alvarez. The fastball went behind front leg and hit his back foot. So that's how far he missed his target. And I say that because you don't really lose arm speed or anything like that if you're coming back after a big layoff. It's more command and being able to spot your pitches where you need to in a big game like this.
And on the other side, Christian Javier, he's exactly what the Astros needed. What did you see from him on the mound?
Well, first of all, I've got to give a lot of to the Astros pitching coaches. I'll be honest with you. The second half of the season, he was bad. You know, he didn't pitch well at all. They just worked and worked and worked. They said we're close. It's going, man, late in the season to be able to see a big change in somebody happen very often because your body's so sore and you're tired. Javier pitched in the WBC. He had to ramp it up early. Not very much recovery time from last postseason. I just didn't think he was going to get there, but stuck with it, and I can't believe it. The last four outings, he's looked like himself again, a pitcher who last year gave up an opponent's batting average of 170, and he's getting the swing and miss again. It's the fastball is back to where it was, and he just wasn't locating. He wasn't getting any swing and miss like 2.5 months, but for whatever reason, I don't know, magic beans they've got in their back pockets, but the pitching coaches did wonders getting him back to what we saw last postseason.
Does it surprise you at all that the first three games have been won by the road team?
No. I mean, the Astros had a similar occurrence in 2019 World Series, where every game of a seven-game series was won by the visiting team. I don't know what it really means about this Astros team in particular. People ask us, we ask them, and I talked to Dusty Baker about it. Nobody has a really good explanation for why the Astros haven't played very well at home this year. Sometimes you run out of explanations and things just go on. You just got to figure out something else.
Steve Sparks is part of the radio team for the Houston Astros. Enjoy listening to him and Robert Ford on a nightly basis. And he's with us from Arlington, from the Dallas area. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. It's hard to tell on TV, so I'm interested to hear your perspective. How many Astros fans made the trip to Arlington?
You know, Amy, to be honest with you, I was a little surprised by this. It's a great question. Typically during the regular season, especially the last two or three years, the Astros fans have come up in droves, and there's been a lot. I would say maybe a quarter of the stands are filled with Astros fans, maybe even a little bit more. But tonight it wasn't as many, so many excited Rangers fans, and I'm sure there's less tickets available for Astros to come up here and cause a little havoc. So we were watching for that, and they tried to make a little bit of noise on a couple of occasions, but more than anything else, I think it was Javier who quiet the Rangers fans to a degree, and we know that's a pretty good recipe for success when you're on the road.
And what about at Minute Maid Park? How many Rangers fans managed to get in there?
They got in there. You know, the Astros fans have been doing this for a while. They've been very spoiled for the last 7 years in particular. So Altuve tomorrow is playing in his 100th postseason game, believe it or not.
Wow.
The Astros fans let some of them in there, you know, and they tried to make some noise, and they were pretty happy those two games at Minute Maid Park. And when your team's winning on the road, you can hear them. You know, you can hear those people when you're trying to get it going on a couple of occasions when you feel like you're about to erupt and somebody could get a big hit. It just didn't happen for them in game ones and two.
Jose Altuve, as you point out, has an incredible legacy with the Houston Astros, going back to when he was a high draft pick and one of the building blocks of a team that has now gone to seven consecutive American League Championship Series. What he's been able to do over that time, really maintaining such a high level of play and setting the tone. How would you even begin to summarize or describe his contributions to this team in this time?
He's the most popular player on the team. He's a great leader, and he's selfless. So the guys really respect him, you know. And, you know, to be a superstar and to treat everybody like, you know, everybody the same. And he's the best on the team in the community. Doesn't ask for any attention for everything he does. So all those things kind of add up. But I'll say this, Amy, I've never seen a player turn his career into a different type of player. And I want to say that like the first 5 or 6 years, he won 3 batting titles, got a lot of hits, stole a lot of bases. And then he kind of flipped the script and he started to realize, you know what, I've got the ability and I might be able to help the team a little more. And he started to set his goals to get a 900 OPS. So he had to get on base more. He had to walk more, but he also had to slug a little bit more. So he started to add, you know, the home run component into what he's able to do. And to, you know, once Springer left the team and signed with the Blue Jays as a free agent, you know, Altuve at the top of the order was kind of like Springer. It was somebody at the top who could really put a little fear into the starting pitcher, wouldn't let him ease into a game like that prototypical slap hitter at the top. He had the ability to take you deep at the very first pitch. So it's a very uneasy feeling as a pitcher. You're trying to tiptoe sometimes into a game and see what you have, knowing that you could make a mistake on the very first pitch and get hurt and fall behind quickly.
What does it mean to have Justin Verlander back with this team again?
It means a lot. You know, it lets everybody else kind of fall back into the line. And he's pitched more game one starts than anybody else in postseason history. So he can take that mantle and kind of run with that and set the tone, and he takes pride in it. He sets a very high standard. You know, he expects people to be on high alert. He's one of those guys too, Amy, and I've seen this, and when I see our monitors in our radio booth, he's always in the dugout, you know, and I'll say this. I had a lot of teammates who were starting pitchers, and on their days that they weren't pitching, half the time they were in the clubhouse or grabbing something to eat or watching something else on TV, a football game or something else. He's in the dugout. He's talking baseball with the other pitchers on the team or even a position player, but he sets a great example in that way.
Steve Sparks is with us from, where are you guys? Where do you stay, actually? Dallas?
You know what?
Fort Worth?
Yeah, we stay in Dallas. Oh. You know, we stay in downtown. We get spread out a little bit. There's so many more people that travel during the playoff situation. So typically we're with the team all year, but they have so much family and so much front office. We get spread out a little bit to a couple of different hotels.
All right, so from Dallas after Game 3 of the ALCS at the ballpark at Arlington there. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. The Astros, they end up catching the Rangers on the final day of the regular season. They win the division title in a tiebreak. And it was a good battle going back over the last month, even 6 weeks or so.
Sure.
But there was a time when the Rangers had a pretty sizable lead in the division, and even the Mariners were in the mix for the division title. What was the turning point for the Astros' dedication to grabbing that title, too?
You know what? There wasn't a turning point, Amy. I mean, it was a grind. They won five of their last six on the road, but in that last stretch, the last month of the season, they got swept by the Oakland A's. They got swept by the Kansas City Royals. They lost a ton of baseball games to teams that they should have beaten, to be quite frank. So it was not very dissimilar to what the Yankees did. The last team that won back-to-back titles was the 98-99 and 2000 New York Yankees. And that 2000 Yankees team lost 15 of their last 18 games. And they lost to Baltimore, who was last in the division. They lost to the Detroit Tigers. They got swept by them. They were last in their division. Very similar circumstances to what the Astros did. They limped in. They got pretty lucky to get into the playoffs, to be honest with you. Seattle, Texas Rangers, nor the Astros played very well the last month of the season. But they got in. You know, it's a long season. They won 90 games, the same number as Texas, and they had the tiebreaker. So they got the bye. And they needed it. They were beat up. And kind of look at things, it looked like they only had a couple of really decent starters at that time. They felt like if they had to waste those in the wild card round, they were really going to be compromised for the division series. So they felt like they got pretty lucky in that regard.
Mm. By the way, we really enjoyed playing a snippet of your conversation with Dusty Baker after they beat the Twins, where he's trying to spit out that stat, and you guys are either in the middle of the celebration or on the field. I couldn't tell which, but he butchers the stat, and you're like, you couldn't have got that more wrong. And he said, you sound like my mother. Oh, yeah, we enjoyed playing that back.
That's funny. Yeah, you know what's funny about that? Is that stayed with him. I kind of forgot about it, but that stayed with him. And he brought me the article the next day to show me what he was trying to say. He was still in that conversation. He said, bring that back to me later. So some article that Buster Olney wrote that he butchered for about 5 minutes trying to explain it.
So good. Obviously, he's been part of their staying power. But correct me if I'm wrong, there are, what, four guys now that still remain from 2017? How is that even possible to essentially turn over almost your entire roster, not to mention your front office and your manager and your coaching staff, and still go to seven consecutive American League Championship Series?
You know, I can almost sum it up in one thing. When people ask why this team's been able to sustain the success that they have, there was one thing in particular that was very helpful and brought on by a guy by the name of Oz Ocampo. And he was the Astros international scout. And he felt like that some teams might have been missing on some guys. You know, they sign all these Latin guys when they're 16 years old. And he thought, you know, there's got to be some guys slipping through the cracks. Let's just take a shot on some guys. And they started to sign guys that were 19, 20, 21 years old, which were ancient, right? You think, why would you do that, you know? So they did it. And I'll be darned, you know, if some of these guys start to filter through, and some of the names are Framber Valdez, signed when he was 20 years old.
Wow.
Christian Javier was 20 years old when he signed. Jose Urquidy was 20 years old. Luis Garcia, who was second place in the Rookie of the Year a few years ago, he just had Tommy John surgery. but he was part of that mix. Brian Abreu, who you could argue is one of the best relief pitchers in baseball, was in that mix. And another guy who's on their playoff roster, Ronel Blanco, was working at a car wash when he was 22 years old.
What?
And signed with the Astros. And he's in the big leagues now as a 30-year-old. So I say that for this. So maybe got a little bit lucky, but it was very smart. But they have all these guys who have contributed. But not only that, think about how many times a 16-year-old guy signs, and by the time he's 21 or 22 years old, the team loses control because he hasn't gotten to the big leagues yet. Somebody else gets him for his prime of his career. But the Astros have all these controllable pitchers. You know, Javier, all these guys, you know, still aren't free agents, and they're all closing in on 27 to 31 years old now, and they're pitching in their prime for a playoff caliber team.
Wow, brilliant strategy. Even if it was a bit risky, it obviously worked out. Wow.
It does sound risky, but they weren't paying. I mean, they were only paying, you know, these guys had no leverage, so they were only paying them $25,000 to sign. I mean, that's a lot of money to these guys, but compared to you look at first rounders or third rounders, and these guys are getting somewhere between $1 and $3 or $4 million a lot of times in those early rounds in the draft.
Steve, before I let you go, obviously still a long way to go against a Rangers team that has an incredibly powerful and potent lineup. From a pitcher's perspective, how do you approach a lineup like that, even as the Astros try to climb back in the series?
You know what I think you have to do, Amy, especially when you're playing in series like this? You know, a lot of times you watch the first game and you kind of figure out, all right, this is how they're going to try to get guys out. But when you're facing guys like Seager and Semien and Adolis Garcia and Josh Young and all these guys, I don't feel like there's one way you can stay with an approach when you're playing a long series like this. If this goes to seven games, say, you know, if you stay with, you know, fastballs in and breaking stuff away the whole time, guys are going to start cheating for those pitches and start looking for them. If you miss by just a little bit, they're going to get hammered. So I say that to say this. I think you have to mix it up on good hitters. I say that a lot when people say, how do you get Yordan Alvarez out? There's no one way. You have to mix it up, and he has to almost be looking for something else for you to be able to get him out sometimes when he gets locked in. But I think in series like this, especially as they progress, you better have a couple tricks in your back pocket to unleash, because I don't think there's certainly one way to get certain guys out. I'll say this, and I think this is tried and true throughout the playoffs that I've been watching here for a little while now. You got to pitch inside. I mean, you just can't live outside, away, 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 over and over and over again, because you can't get away with any mistakes. You got to make guys conscious inside once or twice at least during a game, and showing that you can throw strikes in there, too, so they can't dive out over the plate all game long.
Ooh, great stuff. I like that. Steve Sparks, a former big leaguer himself and part of the radio team for the Houston Astros, along with Robert Ford, one of my favorite listens. You guys always have such a good time. You make it fun for the audience as well. And now looking at a 2-1 deficit for the Astros in the ALCS. But, yeah, they've been here before. It's always good to catch up with you. Thank you so much for a couple of minutes.
You too, Amy. Thanks for having me.
I always learn something from Steve and his perspective, and I like what he had to say about Justin Verlander and the fact that Justin's not typical. He's in the dugout. He's always engaged, even on days when he's not scheduled to start. Actually, I've heard Justin himself talk about it before. When it is my day to start, no one talks to me. And that's fairly common among starters. But you know who else came to mind when he was saying that? Is Clayton Kershaw. He's almost always in the dugout talking to guys and engaging. And yeah, there's a reason why other pitchers want to talk to them, want to be around them, want to pitch on the same staff, is because they're not just committed to their own craft, but they're also committed to making other teammates better along the way. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, our Facebook page too. Good to connect with you. Did you get through your hump day with no major incidents? I don't know if you'd consider taking Penny to the vet an incident, but it did consume most of my day. Although she is now, I hope, sleeping comfortably with a donut around her neck. I don't know if that's the case. Could you imagine sleeping with that thing around your neck? That's how I feel when I see people in airplanes with the donut pillow around their necks. to me, it's always been real uncomfortable. I took one with me on a flight to Africa, and I couldn't use it. I didn't like it around my neck. It felt like I had a crick in my neck, but I did end up using it. So as opposed to being around my neck, just kind of behind my head was how I used it. But honestly, after I took it to Africa, I never used it again.
I have one. I don't love it. They could be better. Like, there could be a better design for, like, a neck support on a plane. Because, like, it doesn't really support it. Maybe mine's not big enough. I need a better one. But I feel like my neck still, it hurts my neck more in the end. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan. So I can feel and empathize with Penn. But she needed it. We had to go to the doctor. They love her there. They always call her beautiful and gorgeous. And, you know, she can't hear any of that. But at least she's... At least she wags her tail. She feels the vibes.
Feels the love, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. All right. We're just getting warmed up, I guess. I mean, we're already an hour and 20 minutes in, but we have a lot to do. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. Here on After Hours, we like you as much as you like us.
Hey, what's going on? I love the show. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, enjoying your show, Amy. I'm normally not up to hear you, but you got a hell of a show.
Thank you.
Hi, Amy. I remember talking with you when you very first started on CBS. You're such a superstar.
Amy, thank you for taking my call. First time calling. Listen to your show every morning as I travel into Boston.
First time caller in any sports show ever. So you are kind of taking my sports show virginity right now.
Okay, well, that's not creepy at all.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Up, well, that should do it. Or maybe we can help. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. One baseball game on this Wednesday night, game 3 of the ALCS, but a doubleheader coming up in mere hours, plus the start of week 7 in the NFL season. Week 7, wowzers. We'll have our game of the week poll as always. And yeah, there is a certain game that I think might steal the show. Sometimes I don't gauge your reactions correctly. I will admit to that. The fact that I very often pick the game that gets the fewest number of votes is probably fairly indicative. But I think if you look at the schedule this week, we've got a few that will make the poll that I think kind of stand out. But then we've got one that should float your boat. On Sunday Night Football, the Dolphins and the Eagles. This might be the game. Maybe the Eagles are inspired by the Phillies. This might be the game where we see the Eagles look more consistent, A. B, maybe look more like that well-rounded team from the NFC Championship or late last year that could beat you a couple different ways. They could beat you with the defense, with the pass rush, with the pressure. Remember how many guys had double-figure sacks last year, the run game, the ball control, and we could see the Eagles fly, too. But you want to talk about fly. That's the Dolphins. And they are doing such a great job protecting Tua. And it's two things. It's the run game or the threat of a run game, even without Devon Achane. Raheem Mostert with a huge performance last week. There was no doubt. So it kind of works in concert. But the offensive line is protecting Tua. He's protecting himself by getting rid of the ball early, but defenses also have to guard against the run. They've got this perfect storm that makes it so challenging for defenses. So Dolphins at Eagles. Not sure how you think the game will play out. It's always fun to watch because it never quite goes according to plan, but does it change your mind that Julio Jones is now in the mix with the Philadelphia Eagles?
I still have love for the game, you know. Been talking to Howie, and there's a lot of guys here too on this team. I know Jalen, Smitty, AJ, Fletcher. I mean, it goes on. You know, I know so many guys. And just getting here with Nick, you know, just talking to him, keeping it fun, and also making the main thing is going out there and compete and be accountable, you know, and have a lot of success.
It's one of those moves that the Eagles can make without a whole lot of risk. I mean, yes, Julio's a Pro Bowler at the time that he got in and first few years before some of the injuries and before age caught up with him a little bit, he was one of the best receivers in the NFL and did play with A.J. Brown for a short time. I mean, he's accomplished. You know, he's a guy that could beat you for a jump ball. He's physical. He would go toe-to-toe with any defender. And most of his success came with the Falcons. He's their all-time leader in receiving yards, 100-yard games. And these are years past. Was with the Bucs last season and has had, here's what's kind of fun, the Eagles know him well because he's had great success against the Eagles during his career. But he's also struggled with injuries. And so now, can he revive his career? He's only 34. It's funny because you would think he'd be a lot older. He's only 34, but the physical body's been through the ringer. I'm glad that he still has love for the game. And anything that the Eagles can add. Now, we had just talked to Cynthia Freeland about the Eagles and the fact that they're barely targeting DeVonta Smith. He's not seeing nearly the number of balls thrown to him as he did last year. But it's still a wrinkle. Now, what does Julio Jones bring to the table? And how quickly can he be in shape? Just a one-year contract was essentially is through the end of the season. But yeah, how does he fit into this Eagles offense?
The biggest thing for me is just go out here and learn as much as I can right now. And wherever the team needs me to fit in it, I'm willing to do. I'm a veteran. I can, move around, whatever the case may be.
He's a guy that's, coming in, and he's about his craft. And obviously knowing where he comes from and knowing kind of where our background resides. He has that mentality. He's a future Hall of Famer. I mean, he's as good as it gets, So he's coming in with a great mentality and a great person to add to this team.
It's interesting that Jalen says knowing where we come from, referring to their time at Alabama, I presume, because they both played at Alabama. And I loved watching Julio at Bama and have enjoyed watching him in the NFL. And he's been through, it's funny because that he played for the Bucs last year, right? Because I instantly thought of Baker Mayfield. Not quite the same time span, but four teams in 4 years now for Julio. You could say that the Falcons, quote unquote, got out at the right time, or they didn't want to pay him big money. They felt like they, at the time, they had had Calvin Ridley, right? They crossed paths for like, what, two seasons maybe? But Calvin Ridley had come in and played alongside Julio for at least 1 year. I can't remember if it was two or not. But they felt like Calvin was going to be their number one guy. And so they were willing to let Julio walk. And he's been a journeyman, which is crazy to say. But I look at what Amari Cooper has done and the fact that he has now played for three different teams. And while he's not the number one target for the Browns every possession, he can still, because of his experience, because of his ability to play multiple formations, line up in different places, he can still haul in a great catch. He can still hurt opposing defenses. He can still be a weapon. And I hope that that's the case for Julio. Yeah, 13 years. Goodness. You know what I'll always remember about Julio Jones? And I'm sure I'm not the only one. Falcons fans, I apologize. But do you remember the toe drag catch he made up the right sideline, deep into Patriots territory, late in the Super Bowl in Houston? So obviously the epic collapse by the Falcons. But I was in the stadium. And I was sitting along the right side, which happened, well, if you're looking downfield toward the the Patriots, well, Patriots territory, but toward the end zone where the Falcons were driving. And it was above the Patriots sideline. So it was above the Patriots bench. And that's where I was sitting. And we had this great perspective down. I was maybe six sections up. Awesome view. Had this great perspective down that sideline. You see him grab the ball, fall out of bounds, and they were instantly in field goal range. Mm-hmm. And that's what they needed, was a field goal. And the place went crazy. The place just went insane.
Should have sealed it.
And the guy next to me, we said the same exact thing. That's it. That seals it. That's the game.
Should have.
And, of course, we know what happens next. They end up getting – there's a sack in there. They're out of field goal range. Crazy, the things that you remember, right? I couldn't probably tell you many things about last year's Super Bowl. But I can remember these moments. Anyway, so, yeah, that Julio Jones catch is one I will always remember. Always remember. And Kyle Shanahan, the Falcons didn't play it right, give credit to the Patriots. But, yeah, I thought that was it. I thought that was the catch.
It should have been.
That won the Super Bowl for the Falcons.
It should have been. And unfortunately, it's a footnote that you remember it, but unfortunately, most people don't.
You don't think
and
so?
And the ones that
you
do.
You remember it.
Yeah, but I mean, I remember stupid things. That doesn't really serve anything. But the people that do remember it don't remember it for the amazing catch that it was. You remember it for, man, that was where the Falcons should have won that Super Bowl, and they still choked it away. It's tough. It's tough.
It was.
If I was a Falcon fan, that's tough.
But it was a brilliant catch. I mean, he was falling out of bounds, dragging his toes in the Super Bowl. I mean, it was so brilliant.
It should
Julio.
Be something that we see all the time when
it
the Super Bowl rolls
be.
Up, but we don't.
It should be along the lines of, say, the David Tyree catch. So that was a little more of a miracle. But this was such incredible skill by Julio on the game's biggest stage.
I would think more like the Lynn Swan down the sideline with the Steelers. That
Ooh,
catch that
go.
We see every year over and over. But we don't. We may see the Julian Edelman catch in that game.
Oh, yes.
But we don't see that one. Why?
Because it wasn't a game winner.
It should have sealed it. It didn't.
Yeah.
And the Falcons have heard about it since.
That was the reaction, though, inside the stadium. The roar inside the stadium, because that's what it felt like.
And Matt Ryan still hears it from his own colleagues while he's calling games.
I wouldn't be surprised. Oh, Dan Campbell is on the TV in front of us. We love ourselves some Dan Campbell. Lions with another big road game. So we'll start to talk about week 7 as we head up toward the top of the hour.
It's going to be chaotic. Guys are going to be, their heads going to be spinning.
I never get tired of Dan Campbell. Not yet. Has it worn off on you yet?
I actually like Dan Campbell.
Me
I have a soft
too.
Spot, I admit, not
Me
just for
too.
This, but he was a Giant for a while. When the Giants drafted him.
So I don't even remember that.
Yeah, so I remember. I like Dan Campbell as a player. So, no, it's almost like I got a soft spot from going back. He wasn't there for long. I want to say about 4 years, but he was a little bit of a journeyman and a tight end. But the Giants drafted him, and he played there, and he was good for what he was. He was a good number two tight end.
Fun stuff. I feel like we haven't heard from Mike Tomlin in forever because the Steelers were on bye week. And so now, finally, we can have our Tomlin-Campbell 1-2 punch.
We got to keep a lid on it.
Speak for yourself, Coach. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Murray back to throw. And it is. Is it tossed? Oh, my goodness, it's caught. DeAndre Hopkins caught it.
Dapper from under center. Steps back. Throws the fade.
Cooper Kupp's got it. Touchdown, LA.
Burrow back to throw. Looking. Firing deep for Chase in the end zone.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
got it.
Mahomes fires for the end zone, caught! Touchdown, Kansas City!
And off to Eckler again. No, Herbert keeps it, end zone, touchdown! Chargers! Herbert with his second of the day.
Here's the snap. Josh going to keep it himself and run it again inside the 5, into the end zone, touchdown Buffalo! Josh Allen, 9-yard touchdown run. The Bills respond and then some.
It's time for QB News on After Hours.
And this portion of the show, looking ahead to week 7, is brought to you by Wesley Financial. Are you stuck in a timeshare and want out? Contact Wesley Financial Group now and get a free timeshare exit information kit at wesleyfinancialgroup.com. Let's stick in the NFC here as we head up toward the top of the hour, looking for updates on injured quarterbacks. Daniel Jones did not play last week against the Bills because of a neck injury. What's the latest, DJ?
I want to play. I certainly want to play. But at the same time, we've got great doctors, great trainers, and I trust them. So lucky to have them. But yeah, everybody wants to play. Everybody wants to be on the field.
It's kind of a vague answer. Here's what we know. He's not been cleared yet for contact, so that's a problem. Considering the game comes up on Sunday in the early window, the Commanders at the Giants, it may very well be Tyrod Taylor who starts again for New York. Well, how about Justin Fields, who has the broken thumb or dislocated thumb from their last game? The Bears, could they be without their starting QB this Sunday?
Still comes down to the grip strength, where he is later in the week, and we'll see. Right now he's working with the trainers, and that's progressing well, but we'll see where it is. We still think he's doubtful for this week. Tyson, will be the starter if that is the case, and we're certainly excited about him working forward.
This is that moment where you get to know Tyson Bagent, an undrafted free agent who took over for Justin Fields last week. He is from a Division II school. Pretty incredible. And yet he's confident in his ability to perform on an NFL surface.
Just going through college football, I think you start to see guys that are really good that don't make it because they don't know where they're going. So if you're not the fastest guy, you're not the best athlete on the field, as long as you know where you're going and, you know, can play all positions on the field or know what everybody's doing, you're usually going to operate a little bit better than, you know, guys that might be a little bit better than you physically. So especially at this level, everybody's, you know, really smart and really fast. So really understanding what's going on around me, I think has been the only, you know, real focal point since I've been here.
He completed 10 of his first 14 pass attempts in an NFL game, and so his completion rate was over 71%. He had a rushing touchdown, though he did throw a pick. But welcome to the NFL, Tyson Bagent. Top of the hour, Jay's going to tell me what he found out about Tyson's dad. I had no idea. He just blew me away with this. And Tyson could be starting against the Raiders at home on Sunday. Speaking of the Raiders, Devontae Adams is not a happy camper. We will explain. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Josh Dobbs still on track to start for the Cardinals this weekend, but Kyler Murray is practicing again.
It doesn't change my approach at all. It was great having K1 out there, you know, seeing him running around and everything, slinging it. But it doesn't change my approach at all. You know, we're still preparing for Seattle. And, I have my same approach each and every week. You know, I've seen it. You know, I've seen, as we know and we've talked about, you know, I've seen every side of this quarterback thing. So, you know, my approach never changes no matter what. I come in, work hard, prepare, get ready. Well, I'm starting, of course, prepare as that I am the starter, and then if I'm not the starter, preparing as if I'm the starter. So my approach doesn't change, man. It was great to have him back out there, and again, we're excited to prepare for our next opportunity.
Very curious, but I know the work that he's put in. The people that have helped him get to this point, you can't praise enough the whole medical staff, all that, the performance staff, the doctors, all that stuff. But he hasn't taken a snap in this offense either. So, we got to see him do a lot of things. But I know he's excited to get out there and start playing some football.
Kyler Murray hasn't had any experience in the offense that is designed by Jonathan Gannon. And he's finally back on the practice field for the first time in nearly a year. Not quite, but 300-plus days ago. Remember, he tore his ACL in mid-December. So that's a big step, but Josh Dobbs still starting at this point for Arizona. The Cardinals trying to climb out of the basement of the NFC West, and they are on the road at Seattle. All right, so checking out some of the other parts of the schedule. Tampa Bay, coming off the loss against Detroit, is home again to Atlanta, so division game, and Baker Mayfield's trying to move forward.
The film's never as good as you think it is. It's never as bad either. So a few of those things. It's a lot of fundamentals. And just some, like I mentioned, get pissed off. But it's taking pride in your work about executing and doing your job each play. And so today we had a good practice. And there wasn't any rah-rah speech. The guys know what we need to get done. That's why, this is a veteran group that everybody just understands what we need to do to get it fixed. And, like I mentioned after the game, I'll get my stuff fixed and everybody else is doing the same thing. So I'm not worried about it.
I sucked. We sucked. That all sucked. Everything
sucked. I sucked today. We sucked today. It was awful.
He was the the first one to take ownership of it. I will say this. It's kind of jarring to hear a grown-up Baker Mayfield. When did that happen exactly? It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio. Lions off to their fastest start since 2011. And Jared Goff is playing at an MVP level right now.
A lot of hard work, obviously, but typically when the team's playing well, it makes my job a hell of a lot easier. And defense is giving us short fields. O-line's protecting really well, and I got receivers downfield making plays. So all that comes together, and I do my part, and it makes it a lot easier for me.
I'm starting to throw that out there. Give him some love. You guys love to say that. Hey, speaking of love, Jordan Love and the Packers coming off their bye week, and they will be on the road in Denver trying to reset.
Kind of just reflecting on, you know, the game so far, you know, performances so far, kind of things I did good, things I did bad. Just kind of review all that, you know, mentally, and just take those reps and just kind of refocus. Just kind of re-lock back in and just take that time away, that week off, to just kind of, you know, get your mind back to, all right, let's just reset and get back to winning this week.
Yeah, for the Green Bay Packers, they are 2-3, so they're behind the Lions in second place in the NFC North. But after starting out with a couple of wins, they've dropped their last two. And so here are the Lions at 5-1, already have a nice cushion atop that division. So they lost to the Lions a couple weeks ago and then lost to the Raiders before their bye. And speaking of the Raiders, yeah, you've got the Davante Adams component. You've got the Davante Adams wrinkle to the offense that you would think would help to give them an edge, to make them a dangerous offense. And I know Jimmy Garoppolo, he escaped a serious back injury, so they did have to change quarterbacks last week and go with Brian Hoyer, or it could be Aiden O'Connell. Haven't yet heard the status update on Jimmy G. But the fact that Davante Adams is so little used should say something. I mean, for heaven's sakes, Josh McDaniels, he shouldn't be a decoy. He's too good for that. And he agrees. You'll hear him next. It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio.
I'm here to tell you about Pom Pom at Home, where comfort meets elegance. Pom Pom at Home is offering 20% off site-wide for a limited time. See why so many of the top designers use Pom Pom's luxury easy care bedding. They have created a timeless, beautiful, coastal living look that incorporates subtle tones and natural fibers, offering a unique touch. Create your dream bed now. Get 20% off sheets, duvets, throws, and more right now at pompomathome.com. Easy to use, easy to love luxury bedding. Just enter code POMPOM at checkout.
The all-electric Hyundai Ioniq 6 is sleek, full of advanced tech, and has a range of up to 360 miles. Any drawbacks? Yeah, every Ioniq 6 comes with a complimentary EV charger and up to $600 installation credit, so you're going to have to figure out something else to spend that money on. The all-electric Hyundai Ioniq 6. Hyundai, it's your journey.
EPA estimated 361 mile range for Ioniq 6 SE long-range rear-wheel drive with fully charged battery. Actual range varies based on trim and other factors. Actual charge time varies based on charging unit output, temperature, and other factors. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.